Thank you so much. Hello, candidates. I think there's some of you way down there. Okay. This is a big crowd of people who want to be school board members in San Francisco, which is wonderful. I'm going to explain the rules and background for this evening. There are 16 of the 18 candidates on the ballot will be participating tonight, and the seating arrangement was decided by lottery before the forum tonight. Audience members, you have note cards, and I hope you grabbed them as you came into the theater. We'd like you to write down any questions that you have for the candidates, and these questions will be picked up by volunteers, so if you have a question, you have a card, just wave the card around and somebody will come get it from you and bring it up to me. Responses from the candidates tonight will be timed, and signs will be held up to signal speakers of their remaining time. Yellow, 15 seconds left, and red means stop. And if anyone remembers, there's the yellow card in front of you, red card. And if anybody remembers the kind of moderator I am, stop means stop. I'm a rule follower. Verbal interaction between the audience and the candidates during the forum will not be permitted. Again, I'm a rule follower, so don't do that. And we ask that you refrain from clapping during the event. However, we invite the audience and candidates to stay for a few minutes after the forum is over to answer any questions individuals might have. Also, candidates, your mics will be hot all night, so just be aware that it's going to be on even when it's not your turn to talk. After I introduce each candidate, they will begin with a 30-second opening statement. I know that's really fast. Talk fast. Next, I will present the candidates with a scenario that they were given ahead of time, and they will explain how they would handle the situation given and are each given 1 minute to do this. Following that, we will do a lightning round, which some people like and some people don't, but we're doing it, so get ready, where candidates give quick visual indications of their answers to a set of questions. After the lightning round, I will present questions submitted by each sponsoring organization that will be answered by two or three candidates with 1 minute for each to respond. With the remainder of the time, we will take questions submitted by the audience. Two or three candidates will be chosen to answer each question asked with 1 minute for each response. At the finale of the event, each candidate will have the opportunity for another 30-second closing statement. And does anybody have any questions? Thumbs up? We're good? All right, here we go. I'm going to sit here because it's a comfy chair and I can't see all the way down there anyway. So, all right. I'm going to introduce each candidate, and they will have a half a minute for an opening statement before we move on to the next candidate. We will proceed in the order drawn by lottery before the event began. And candidates, as a reminder, the timekeeper right there will hold up signs when your time is coming to a close. At that point, when you see that red sign, finish your thought, and then stop talking. And then we'll move on to the next person. And this is how the timing is going to work for the whole evening, okay? So, are we ready for our 30-second opening statements? We're going to start at this end. Mimi, I love it. Closest to me. Welcome. Thank you. Off you go.
Hi, my name is Lee Miao Levitt. I'm a parent, I'm an immigrant, and I have a 20-year career in public education. I'm very passionate about social-emotional learning, as well as, you know, bring all the resources that are needed to our schools, working around the state eventually to make sure our schools are properly resourced. Because we have to get at the root of the problems, and that is underserved students, underfunded schools. Ultimately, I will defend access for our public schools because I did that at City College. We saved that college from being closed, and I'm still proud to be there today. Thank you.
Thank you. The next candidate, Monica Chinchilla. Your time starts now.
My name is Monica Chinchilla, and I'm excited to run because I know our schools impact generations. No one is going to create the solutions for us, and so I'm excited to really work with families and communities to help provide those solutions for our public schools. My platform is three things. It's teacher support, it's community schools, and it's strong start, TK to third grade education. I'm a parent, I'm an organizer, I'm relentless, and I'm excited to be in this position so that we can work together to make sure every child feels valued and that our staff within SFUSD have the supports they need.
All right, is Darren not here? Okay, Darren is not here right now, so we are going to skip to Gabriela. Gabriela Lopez.
Hi, my name is Gabriela Lopez. I am a fifth grade Spanish immersion teacher at Flynn Elementary in SFUSD. I've been doing work in education for over 10 years in a variety of capacities, including arts education, working at San Quentin State Prison, and I do a lot of work within the schools as a union representative on the school site council, being an arts coordinator. So I have a vast set of experience and am pushing for the teacher voice on the school board. Thank you.
Thank you. Is Philip here? I don't see him. Not yet? Okay. We'll come back to him. Michelle Parker, please.
Hi, my name is Michelle Parker. I am a public school parent of three kids who have been in SFUSD since kindergarten. My oldest just graduated from high school. I am prepared to do this job. I have been active at the school site, district, and state level in education policy and finance. I have led a public oversight body. I have been a nonprofit board of directors president. I was president of the district PTA, serving more than 60 schools in the district. And my priorities in this campaign are to expand early education so all kids have 2 years of high-quality preschool before they come to our schools in kindergarten, expanding career technical education, and making sure that all of our teachers can live in the city and that they are supported.
Thank you. Our next candidate is Alita Fisher.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Alita Fisher. In the 13 years, my four children have attended seven SFUSD schools. I've been an active volunteer and an active committee member, and now I'm the chair of the Community Advisory Committee for Special Education. I sit on the district LCAP task force, which is all about budget accountability. I'm an African-American parent. My students are all African-American, adopted out of foster care. I'm a former foster parent, and I'm running. We'll talk more about that in a bit.
Thank you. Good job. Okay. Roger Sinison, please.
Hello. My name is Roger Sinison. I'm a parent of three children in the district, a son of an immigrant refugee, and married to a 25-year veteran public school teacher. I'm also a software developer working with school districts around the state on their central office systems. I want to address fundraising inequities across schools. I want to implement community schools, and I want to make sure that technology and arts, the STEAM subjects, are available to all students in the classroom and as extracurriculars. Thank you.
Thank you. Next candidate, Mia Satya.
Hello, my name is Mia Satya, and I'm running for San Francisco Board of Education. I have been doing activism and organizing, fighting for racial, economic, and gender justice since I was 14 years old. And my platform is to make sure that our students are first and foremost safe, supported, and empowered to succeed. And that means making sure that our teachers are paid a living wage. I have served on over 10 committees in local government, and I am excited about the potential of serving on the school board. I look forward to gaining your support.
Thank you. Next candidate is Martin Rawlings Fine.
Hello, my name is Martin Rawlings Fine. I am a parent in the district. I am bisexual and transgender. I am a trans parent. I've served on PTAs and SSCs, and my kids are at Lakeshore and Hoover, and hopefully here sometime in the future. I believe in neurodiversity and education. I had a stroke when I was 10, in the fifth grade, and I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't had a really good school system and really good teachers and wonderful people who were going to be taking care of me. Thank you.
Thank you. The next candidate is... not Lynette Thompson? Okay. I can't see that far down there. Hi. Okay. The next candidate is Faunga Maliga.
Hi, talofa, aloha, malo elele. My name is Faunga Maliga. I was appointed to the school board this morning by Merritt Breed. Thank you. I'm a school social worker and a parent with kids in public schools. I'm also a native of San Francisco. I actually went to JUG McAteer right in the back of us. I'm the first Pacific Islander to ever run for the school board in the history of San Francisco. My platform is very simple: wellness, community schools, and making sure that our educators and all our staff are taken care of. Thank you.
The next candidate is Lex Leifheit.
My personal story is growing up, I moved a lot. My family teetered in and out of jobs. Math was a lifeline to going to a good college, and theater was the community that accepted outsiders. I'm running for school board because I want more for my sons. I want them to grow up and be educated in community. I want them to be invested in their neighborhood, and I want neighborhoods that are invested in all students. Schools are the city. Schools are our next generation. And to that end, my priorities are strategic, long-term, sustainable solutions to closing the achievement gap, and we'll talk more later. Thank you.
The next candidate is Allison Collins.
Hi, my name is Allison Collins. I'm the only candidate running that actually has kids in the public schools and has actually taught in a San Francisco public school. I started out at Galileo, taught at Hoover and Everett. When my kids were 5 years old, I enrolled them in public schools and became a parent advocate, and I've been organizing parents for the last 10 years. My focus is on fighting for safe schools, both emotionally, culturally, and obviously physically. I want academic opportunities for all kids and more communication with families. I've also worked in central office, so I'll talk more later. Thanks.
Thank you. The next candidate is John Tresvina.
I'm John Tresvina. My parents were immigrants from Mexico. I was born and raised in San Francisco and a proud product of our public schools. My parents believed in education as a path to serve others. Throughout my public service career, I've been fighting for immigrant rights and civil rights at the national and local levels. I've been closely involved with our public schools since the 1970s, been a fighter for families. Too many parents are frustrated by a school district that's failing our children. I'm running to help all our children succeed in school. Academic excellence, closing the achievement gap. I need your support to get the job done. Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, at the far end, is candidate Phil Kim.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Phil Kim. I actually began my time in the classroom teaching 7th and 8th grade science, and now I have the great privilege of overseeing curriculum and instruction for science, design, computer science, and engineering. I love my job in that I have the great privilege of simply obsessing about the quality of teaching and learning in our schools and thinking through how we can best support our teachers in actually changing the outcomes of our students by focusing on instructional practice and supporting our teachers through coaching. I firmly believe that the thing that we'll talk about that later. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, good job. That was some fast talking. Now, on to the next section. Each candidate was sent the following scenario yesterday and asked to be prepared to respond how they would handle the situation if it was presented to them as a school board member. And they will each have 1 minute to respond in the order which was chosen at random. I'm going to read the scenario, and then I will call on each candidate to answer the question. All right, we would like to know how you plan to use feedback from families. So here's the scenario. Families are concerned about a situation at a school site. For example, a classroom has had no permanent teachers, students are experiencing emotional distress, and they have contacted SFUSD leaders, including you and your colleagues on the Board of Education, and have spoken emotionally about the situation at Board of Education meetings. Yet the situation is still not resolved. What are three steps you would take towards resolution of this issue, including your plan for communicating with families? All right, reminder that you will have 1 minute to respond, and the first candidate is Phil Kim.
I don't need to keep standing, do I? Okay, great. I think first and foremost, and this is just kind of my style and approaching generally how I make decisions, I want to make sure everyone is at the table and I get a good understanding of what exactly is happening at the school site, given that I'm probably not there on a day-to-day basis. So I think first and foremost, one, I want to make sure I bring school staff, the family, and district staff together to better understand the situation for myself, speaking with my colleagues on the board, et cetera. Number two, I would immediately reach out to the superintendent to make sure that they're aware that I'm aware. And ensure that the parents and their families directly connected to our superintendent to figure out how to best navigate the situation. I am deeply, deeply committed to ensuring that our district staff are fully aware of what our expectations are as a board and how we communicate with families and the timeliness in which we respond to incidents on campus. And first and foremost, I think for me, I want to make sure that our families feel that they are heard. I think the timing of that response is going to be tough and dependent on the superintendent, but I am committed to hearing the voices of parents.
Thank you. The next candidate is Alita Fisher, please.
First, I want to correct, I realized after I was thinking back, I called myself an African-American parent. I need to be very clear, I'm a white parent of African-American students, and just for those who are listening on the radio. But I would approach this with the mentality of those who are closest to the problem are also closest to the solution. And as the chair of the Community Advisory Committee for Special Education, I do a lot of work with my fellow advisory committees, the APAC, the Parent Advisory Committee, the District High English Learners Advisory Committee. There's a lot of us who work together on joint problem solving because so many of the issues that students face, whether it's a student with a disability or a minority student or an English learners, they're very similar in nature. So we do a lot of community brainstorming. In fact, we have a recent situation at Monroe Elementary School where families have been coming to the board because they haven't been able to hire a Spanish immersion teacher all year. So one of the things that we've proposed is bring a central office staff to the school, a certificated teacher. We need to do some outside-of-the-box thinking for situations like this.
Thank you. The next candidate, Roger Sinison, please.
The first thing I would do would be to meet with the parents that were involved and acknowledge the situation, get their side of the story, and make sure that I truly understood what they were, what the issue was, and let them know that I was hearing them. Then I would go and meet with people at the school site or in the appropriate department to make sure that that they understood that there was a problem and to find out what could be done about it, and to come up with solutions. And then, depending on the situation, turn around and meet with the parents again to let them, to give them an update, making sure that there's translation available in case that's part of the issue. And if appropriate, involve the principal or other department staff who might need to be there. And then if it were something that we're going to take, was going to take a while to resolve, I would update them frequently. Thank you.
Thank you. Next candidate, Lee Miao Lovett, please.
This is not a hypothetical situation. One of my City College students said that in high school, she had not had a permanent teacher in her math class all year, and this was an advanced math class. So three steps. First step is a critical meeting. I call it that from personal experience, having worked with SFUSD and City College, where you have to have that meeting right away to build trust, build a plan. And if it's the case of a classroom that's been destabilized, let's bring in the families, let's bring in the principal or the vice principals, and start a conversation, get things going. The next step is to actually close that loop, because that's not sufficient to have that first conversation. You really need to bring the stakeholders. So again, the families, also the educators in the school, social workers were needed, administration, and perhaps elected officials, as was recently a case with a bilingual classroom that was missing a teacher. And then finally, the community. This is really important. We have to look to see if there are systemic issues, and is there special ed involved? Are there budgetary issues why that classroom isn't being staffed?
Thank you. Next candidate is Lex Lifeheit, please.
So our school district promises 21st century education, but we have 20th century communication. And I think in order to get out from under just the volume of requests that come in, we need to have some systems change. And one thing I would look at is a 311 system that helps parents to navigate common questions and common issues that arise, and also use that system to have accountability about who gets answers, who gets responses, and who doesn't, so we can move towards equity in how we're communicating with parents and families. So that's the sort of big overarching change. The second thing is that as a commissioner, whenever anyone emails me, they will get an immediate reply that lists the staff contact information for the most commonly asked questions and gives some guidelines for, what steps I would hope that parents and families and students take to explore something before bringing it to the board level, because we can't answer every question and do the work that needs to be done. And finally, with those situations that are truly urgent, I would email the parent and tell them what was going to my timeline for looking into things and responding, and then do some of the things mentioned before. Thank you.
Thank you. The next candidate is Allison Collins, please.
I've dealt with this at Jean Parker. We had a teacher that was out. We had rolling subs. It was difficult because a lot of the families were Chinese-speaking, and so I think that's also something that needs to be addressed, is a lot of times with monolingual families or families that are not professional, they may not be emailing or, you know, they're verbally listing their complaints. And so talking to families is important, but also making sure some families are telling me that they're going to the Office of Family Voice, they're getting turned away, or they're not, you know, we're not documenting what's happening. And I think that's a crucial step in following through with the sites, is making sure that things are getting documented. And a lot of times these aren't getting documented, and then they just persist. And ultimately this comes down to management and resources. As Lee mentioned before, sometimes teachers are leaving not just because there's like a fluke, but there may be systemic things going on at the school when there's leadership that maybe is not as supportive as we would like, or when there's not enough resources to deal with issues at the school. That's when you see large numbers of teachers leaving, and that's something that needs to be addressed as well.
Thank you. The next candidate is Gabriela Lopez.
We would need to fill this role immediately. I've worked at a school 3 years ago, this happened, where one of the classrooms didn't have a teacher for 3 months, and I'm seeing the impact that that had on my fifth graders currently. So making sure there's a permanent substitute in there, a paraeducator, a certificated staff from central office, and ensuring that they're not alone in the classroom, because this community has already been affected, and when you throw in a new person without any support, that's going to continue this process in the classroom, and they won't be building community, which is much needed. I would be periodically checking in the classroom, teaching myself if I have to, and making sure that we're being held accountable. We are here to serve our families and our students, and checking in constantly is what they need to ensure that we are here for them. There should be no classroom without a teacher.
Thank you. I want to remind everybody that if you have questions, please write them down on a card. There's some up here, and wave them around if you'd like to have them collected so they can bring them up for that part of our evening. The next candidate is Martin Rawlings Fine.
So I was studying to be a rabbi before this, so my approach might be a little different. I would first, you know, touch base with that family and find out what's happening in the classroom, go to the school, figure out what's happening, really dive into it, because, you know, without community, we're really nothing. And I think it's really important that we have those connections. And I would really love to find out what's happening and then keep that communication line open. Because when something is solved, it's never really solved. My daughter went without a teacher for a half a year at her school. Substitute. And in the end, they worked on getting a teacher in, an actual student teacher who was getting her credential, and she finished out the year, and it made such a difference in all of the students throughout the year. All of that lost time was made up. So I think finding somebody credentialed, somebody who could be there, would be wonderful, but really communicating with families and having that connection is really important, because you need to find out what's happening.
Thank you. The next candidate is John Trisvina, please.
Thank you. This scenario is way too familiar for those who've battled the SFESD bureaucracy. Upper echelon administrators, school board members ignore letters, phone calls, even from elected officials. I will do what I can to stop that dismissive culture. First, I'll be accessible. You'll see me at sporting events. You'll see me at community events. You'll see me at school meetings. You'll have my email. You'll have my phone number. Second is I'll use my legislative oversight experience to ask the superintendent and stick with it. Ask the questions that you're asking. And until we get the right answers, we'll continue with it. And then back in a few months later, we'll make sure that the solutions are on track. Second is quality neighborhood schools. One of the barriers to parental involvement is having your child on the other side of town. Third is parental engagement training itself. I ran the Malda Parent-School Partnership Program that trained parents how to work effectively with community-based organizations, trusted intermediaries to have a voice in public schools.
Thank you. thank you. The next candidate is Monica Chinchilla.
So I know with this, there's so many issues that a commissioner is given, not only with the classroom, but there's other things including like assault, racism, et cetera. And you know, for me, I'm an organizer at heart, and my whole passion is how do we activate families and how do we activate students to be part of the solution. So what I would do is upon, you know, first hearing about this instance, whatever instance it is work with the family, like, okay, what entity is going to be in charge of providing, working with the family to provide that solution, whether it's the APAC, the LPAC, the PTA, the school site council, who's going to work with that family to come to me with what are potential solutions for this issue. And then it's really important to set a timeline so that we're not letting things lag for months or for years. And so setting a timeline that within a week, we're going to come back, we're going to talk about what potential solutions are, and then we're going to set another timeline for actually resolving the issue. So whether it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 1 week. And so empowering that community or that entity to really provide the ideas and then to carry out the solutions. And then it's important as a member to follow through, because when we don't follow through, those send messages about value. And we really want to make sure that every child, every family feels valued within SFUSD.
Thank you. The next candidate is Mia Satya.
Hello. So my background is in youth development and community organizing. And so I look at this not only as a former young person myself, but also as a community organizer and someone who's been trained in policy analysis. I first want to make sure that we are listening to our young people, to our educators, and to our families. Then I think that we need to work together on whatever issue this is to co-create a solution. After creating the solution, we need to effectively implement the legislation. And from there, I think what is often missing, and some other folks have talked to this, is we really need to have an evaluation program where we're going back and seeing how did what we set out to do work. I think that, you know, I was talking to young people in the lobby before this and discussing, a lot of times people come to us and say, hey, we have this idea, we're starting this new program, and then we don't know how it goes. We don't know how it's implemented. So I will bring that back to you.
Thank you. The next candidate is Hoga Moliga.
Thank you for the question. I used to tell parents, I was like, these schools belong to the public. You know, you shouldn't have to come here and try to knock on doors. Like, these are our schools. They're public schools, right? And the school district should know that, right? You guys are not the holders of what happens in these schools. They belong to us and the kids that we are bringing to your school. So that's step number one. And I say that because insight is very, very important. And then two, as I read this question, you know, I'm a parent. And also insight, we have to understand, as parents, we only got one shot at this. You know, so we're not asking, we're not here trying to get on people's nerves because, you know, these are our children. And they only go to first grade one time, they only go to sixth grade one time, they only graduate from high school one time. So it's very important for us. So for me, things like this, we have to have a 24-hour policy where we respond back to parents right away. Right, we have to hold, if you're coming to the board already, that means you have taken all these steps and it's come to the point where you want to come to the leadership, okay? But we could talk more about that.
Thank you. And last, Michelle Parker, please.
I was wondering if you forgot me. We obviously all agree that one of the most important things is that families feel valued and heard. And if we can do this authentically and demonstrate real effort to solve problems and communicate with them and work with our communities, we can mitigate some of these problems early on. One thing that I think we have to think about is structure and process. And the question I would ask is, are the people that should be able to resolve the issue able to do that? Are they empowered to do that in the district? Because I have run across a lot of great district staff who aren't able to make decisions and help the families and solve the issues that they're actually in the position that they're supposed to be able to solve. So we have to fix that, because our superintendent doesn't have the capacity to solve every single issue. He needs everybody else below him to be able to get to that issue. And sometimes our families want to have a resolution that is, we can't be incredibly transparent. It might be personnel related, whatever. So we need to still be as transparent as possible with them. And we need to communicate why there might be a delay, if there is a delay. And I would be asking the staff for a communication plan and a timeline about how they talk with families and others and request for them to notify us how that is happening and when it is resolved, as well as from the people who are affected.
Thank you. Did I forget anybody? Good? Okay. Excellent. All right. The next section are questions submitted by the sponsoring organization. And each question will be directed at two or three candidates. And you will have 1 minute to respond. And I, as moderator, have the prerogative to press or ask follow-up questions to clarify any candidate's answer. Okay? Got to get my little chart and make sure we do this equally. All right, here we go. First question, we'll start with Alita Fisher. This is from Parents for Public Schools. Do you see increasing SFUSD enrollment as a priority? If so, what is your plan for attracting and retaining more families to public schools, taking into account the diverse populations in San Francisco? And again, you have 1 minute.
Okay, yes. Yes, I think this is a huge priority because every student that enters our district also brings state and federal dollars with them. State is $11,000. So for every, I can't do math, I'm a mechanical engineer and I can't do math on the fly, but for every 1,000 students, or every, that's million, that's $1 million. Correct my math if I'm wrong. That's why we provide tools such as calculators for our students, right? The concrete actions, I mean, we've got some great schools that are gems, that are underserved, that really need some PR and some love. My kids started at Mira Loma 13 years ago when the fundraising budget there was $10,000. When I was on the PTA board, we were really nervous if we were going to make it from 15 to 30,000. And now we're one of those schools that raises over 400,000. And unfortunately, that's really what makes us such an attractive school right now. And that's my time.
Thank you. Again, do you see increasing SFUSD enrollment as a priority? And if so, what is your plan for attracting and retaining more families? Li Miao Levitt, please. And also, Allison, we're going to have you answer this, too. So
at City College, we dealt with this huge enrollment crisis after 4.5 years of our school being threatened with being shut down. And so from firsthand experience, I know how important it is to build enrollment from the ground up. Why don't we change the enrollment fair so it's not this big, scary thing, the one that just happened, but that we actually create opportunities to celebrate the arts and, you know, showcase what students do in their schools. You know, bring, yeah, there are tours, but let's maybe have hubs throughout the city where people can come and observe firsthand and talk to parents and families and even the kids. I think that we need to, you know, do this in a systematic way to where the communities can be promoting their schools because they understand what the hidden gems are that are out there beyond the NISPA-specific popular schools. We can be very intentional about that, and central office needs to support those kind of homegrown efforts.
Thank you. Allison, same question, please.
So I guess I just want to say that the student assignment system is always described as a lottery, and I think that's really problematic because people win and they lose, and I don't think any child should lose when it comes to their education. But unfortunately, I mean, there's 70 schools in our district, and most parents choose maybe 10 to 15 of those schools, and so it creates a high demand for a small number of schools, and so families in those neighborhoods have a really hard time getting in, and then there's families in the Bayview, most of them leave their neighborhood. Some of that is because they feel like their schools are under-resourced, but there's also like a lack of information about some of the amazing schools in our district. So number one, I think we need to do a lot more to reach out to families. I have twins applying for high school. Nobody from central office has reached out to me to help me with this transition, and we rely a lot on schools and a lot on parents to do a lot of this marketing work. I think that's not fair because there's some schools that don't have parents who have that capacity, those schools don't get marketing, and then we just continue this cycle of them being under-resourced and under-enrolled. So we need to really push up the marketing from the central office and in outreach and customer service, and then we also need to fix some of our schools that really do need improvement.
Thank you so much. All right, the next question will be for Martin, Monica, and Voga, and it comes from the 2nd District PTA. What will you do to help families become more engaged in their children's education? And we'll start with Martin, please.
Hit the softball to me, I guess.
how do we get parents more engaged? How many people are here tonight? Look around. There are a lot of parents who are here. It's great. But we need to be filling the seats, right? We need to be bringing the people in to potlucks and interesting things that PTAs are putting on, making things that parents want to come to. Our PTA at Lakeshore did a great thing. We started pairing, you know, learning with food and socializing at the PTA meetings. And that was a really big draw. And I think that's really important. Communities need to stick together. And each school needs to have a school board member come out to them every once in a while. And people need to see those school board members and the people from the district all the time. And they need to know them. And part of that is community engagement. You got to get out there. You got to reach out to parents who are applying to schools and really bring those people back. Thank you.
Thank you. Monica?
All right. So first, we have to create an environment where our parents feel safe and they feel welcomed. And I know this is a challenge, especially, you know, for English language learners or for communities that have been impacted by generational trauma within our city due to being left behind and broken promises. And so first, it's on us as each school to create that environment. So when new parents come in, that there are things, you know, like Martin said, like potlucks, that the ELAC or the APAC is having an orientation meeting and meeting with parents in a culturally sensitive way. And especially, I know, you know, Latin American families, there's a huge difference in the way you engage with your schools in different countries. And so if you have families that are coming from a different country to SFUSD, talking about the culture, like how you can get involved with your child at their school, you know, volunteering, et cetera, working with the teachers. And especially when students start, it's the new school year, it is so important to build that relationship with the teacher. So making sure each teacher is taking that time to really get to know the parents, getting to know the family, so that parents feel safe and welcomed to engage.
Thank you. Up. Fahunga?
Thank you for the question. So parents are engaged, but not all parents, right? And so when I say not all parents, you know, I worked at Burton High School, you know, where there was two people on the PTA, right? And so when it comes to our Pacific Islanders, African Americans, Latino, Latinx families, right, how do we increase parent engagement on that level as well, right? And so also for me, what's important is there's a bunch of mothers in this room. There's been a bunch of mothers at these forums. How do we engage fathers, right? How do we get fathers? So we created a father initiative in the Hope SF public housing sites in here in San Francisco to really start to get fathers back into the picture. Right, so those are things for me. And then two, the communication process, right? And so when we got to Burton High School, they were on the verge of closing down. They were at like 800 kids. We did a parent engagement process and a communication process that was able to really pull parents in. At 4 years later, the school went up by 400 kids. Parent engagement was up by 95%, you know, just as simple as communication. So texting, emails, mails in the mail, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, the next question is going to be for Phil, Roger, and Lex. And the question comes from Support for Families of Children with Disabilities. Do you have personal or professional experience working with children and or youth that have disabilities or their families? And if so, what is that experience? And if not, how do you plan to serve this community best? And we'll start with Phil.
Yes, when I was teaching, I was part of the IEP process for several students of mine and worked closely with our learning specialists in identifying the best way to support students, both that were legally, not only legally required, but also additional support services that our school provided. We developed what we call care teams at my school site, where we essentially brought in mental health specialists, our teachers, special education teachers, paraeducators into one room for every single student that we had on our caseload in our classrooms to talk about ways that we can support more holistically the students. And I know that a similar program exists here in SFUSD as well. I think it's really, really important that we know that parents have a good understanding of what their rights are, that students are aware of self-advocacy and what that looks like and what that feels like, and that teachers are also clear that an IEP is not a burden. It's something that we use to better support our students and how they actually go about leveraging their time to actually differentiate their lessons to better support students with special needs.
Thank you. Roger?
Thank you. So I have a little bit of experience in that my daughter does have a 504. It's not the same level of severity that many do, but it gives me a hint of what the process is so that I can empathize with those who have gone through it. We need to support. One of the things my kids at their elementary school, all three of them, had the experience of the special ed students, the special day class, being included with the regular classes, and all three of them made friends with children from the special day class. And I will say that it was a huge benefit for my kids as much as for the other kids. And I would make sure that that continues, that we include everyone, all students together, and for benefit of all. Thank you.
Thank you. Lex?
So before moving to San Francisco 10 years ago, I co-founded and was the assistant director of the Green Street Arts Center, which was a partnership between a low-income neighborhood action team, Wesleyan University, and the city where the college was based. And part of my role was designing a curriculum and working with homeschool families, and many of those families had students and had children with special needs. The university hadn't really thought about what that meant before they started this program. They needed to do more on-the-ground planning with parents. So we were in a situation where my role was really to identify resources and training for the instructors, and I did that very much led by the parents and what their needs and what their suggestions were. And then when it comes to working with families in the school district, I think, you know, two things I've heard. One is that inclusion is very important. And from special ed instructors in the school district, I've heard that it is important, and it's also full inclusion is a solution for infinite resources. So I'll continue to really listen and find common ground, but structurally, okay.
I like that ending. All right. Moving on to the next question. This will be for Gabriella, John, and Mia. And this is from the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts PTSA. According to recent data on eddata.org, SFUSD allocates only 43% of general fund expenditures to instruction. The statewide average is 61%, with some districts spending as high as 68%. What is your opinion of the SFUSD budget, and what changes, if any, would you want to see where the district spends its money and how it communicates with the parent community about the budget and budgeting choices? That's a mouthful, but we're going to start with Gabriella.
So what that means is it's directly affecting teacher pay. And when you're talking about living in a city that's so expensive that teachers are fleeing it, and looking at the state average, that really does, those numbers don't make sense. I've talked to a lot of people within the district who have shared how there are people in their department doing the work that requires two. So there are a lot of administrative positions that which money could be put towards classrooms. So we really need to be transparent about where our money is going and ensuring that we're sharing that information with families so that we can better resource our classrooms, better resource our teachers, get more people in the classroom, and give it to those who are doing the work. In SFUSD, it's very administration heavy, and we know that. We talk to people who are in the district who agree, so really being transparent about the budget.
Thank you so much. John?
Thank you. I'm a budget and management expert. As dean of USF Law School, five balanced budgets in Washington, D.C., with HUD working on budgets much larger than even the $890 million budget of the school district. The school district has made some wrong decisions. We all supported, many of us, hopefully all of us supported Prop G to increase the pay for teachers. The money was approved in June. The money won't show up until December. The school district is already paying out the teacher salaries. We have an absolute commitment to teachers, but the mayor, in asking the superintendent, told the superintendent, you're on thin ice by paying out the money before it's in the city. So I would use that as an example of not having the right approach for budgets. We have a scrutiny, and we would look at the entire budget, but certainly trying to make sure that the dollars go to the classroom is critically important.
Thank you so much. Mia?
Hi. So, you know, many of you familiar with my story might have heard that I was a former homeless youth, and I got involved here in organizing and activism because I felt like the way that our city and the way that our schools are spending our scarce resources is not being spent in an ethical or equitable sort of way 100% of the time. So, you know, I have experience on oversight bodies that have overseen the disbursement of over $100 million in critical services for our children and youth. And through that work, both on the Department of Children, Youth, and Their Families Oversight and Advisory Committee, which takes three lines on my resume, and also on the Living Wage for Educators Act, which is the Proposition G formerly mentioned. On all of those meetings, whether it's early in the morning or late at night, I'm asking, who does this serve? How are we spending this? Because 43% is not enough, and we should be spending the majority of our funds in our schools and in our classes.
Thank you so much. So Michelle is the last person for this question. There's one more question, but here's what I'm going to do. I have a sheet, so everybody's going to get the same number of questions. And as we roll into the questions from the audience, ultimately everybody's going to have the same number of questions. So I'm going to actually have Michelle and Phil answer this next question, please. And it comes from the Alliance for Girls. In our research for the Meeting Girls Needs Project for Alliance, whoa, somebody else wants to be a school board member. She drew a great picture. We're almost done. Okay. Sorry. Again, this is for Michelle and Phil. And this is from the Alliance for Girls. In our research for the Meeting Girls Needs Project for Alliance for Girls, we heard from girls of color that their biggest concerns are racial tension at school, teacher racism and gender discrimination, sexual harassment, and low expectations. If you were elected to the District Board of Education, what would be a reform you would make that specifically addresses the needs of girls of color in SFUSD? And why is that specific cause meaningful to you? Michelle?
Well, I'll start with why it's meaningful to me. I want all of our students to feel safe in our schools, and I want them to be because that's just important for their progress and success as a person, but also if they don't feel that way, they can't learn. So specific things I think we can do around this, one, I think we all know, and the district has been starting to make steps on having training for our teachers and other school staff about implicit bias and other things like that. And we can't stop with just school staff and teachers. It's the support staff, it's also our central office staff, it's families, it's other students. And I think that when we hear complaints like sexual harassment, we have to take those things really seriously, act on them quickly, and listen to girls when those happen. And take those voices really seriously. And if there is something that is violent that is happening, we immediately resolve those situations. There will be no time. This is a situation that must be urgent. And that is not just with that one, but many of these things that you just listed in this question, we have to address in the same way.
Thank you. Phil?
I'll also start with why that's meaningful for me. I have, again, the work around science, design, computer science, and engineering, where a large part of my work has been focused on how to elevate the voices and the work of girls of color and partnering with UC Berkeley in programs in partnership with the schools that I work with. I think right off the bat, trainings are always things that we could be doing better at as a district in terms of who is required to be there. And if there are staff in our district who are saying things that are misogynistic or racist and in creating an actively harmful situation for our students, they should not be teaching. And so we need to have a discussion as a district around what that looks like for teachers in our district who are creating hostile environments for our kids, because that is a hiring issue and a firing issue that we need to have a discussion about. And the vast majority of teachers are not there, right? We know that they just require training and intense support, and identifying what that looks like and to what scale and degree is incredibly necessary.
Thank you so much. I want to take this moment to do a shout out for our timekeeper, Terry. She is awesome. Now you can applaud. You can applaud for the timekeeper. Thank you, Terry. Okay, so we are in the final section of the evening, which will be questions from audience members. And if you have any questions that have not been picked up, please raise your hand. And the instructions here are two or three candidates will answer each question, but we have so many great questions. I may just have one person answer a question because I really love a lot of these questions, and if we have two or three, we're never going to get through them. So if that's okay. And you will have a minute to respond. And again, I may ask a follow-up question or I may not. You're doing well over there. I'm going to keep this going. Again, if anybody has any questions, bring them on up. All right, so let's do the first question for Martin. And we're going to start with a question from a student. As a high school student, I do not feel like my peers and I are learning everything we need to be an active participant in democracy. Many students feel that things like more robust political science classes and education around climate and social justice issues are necessary. How might you address this? Martin?
Well, you know, my daughter went to Harvey Milk and it had a really big social justice bend to it, as you can tell. And that, coupled with her parents' activism, made her kind of like super activist for a long time. And I would love to see programs like that, you know, duplicated across the entire school system. It would be wonderful if we could bring social justice and political science and all those lovely classes. I had political science in high school. I had a political science class in high school, and I had the best time ever in it. I would love to have that happen across the district. And it would be amazing if we could bring it and really bring it to everybody across the district, not just 15 schools. So that's really where I would really love to see that happen. And I have lots of plans for this. I think that we could bring a lot of really good education to parents and students and everyone involved in the school district if we really, really worked together as an entire district, not just one or two schools.
Thank you. Lex, question for you. There is no standardization or central website for school tours or shadow opportunities, and this seems inequitable. What would you suggest, or how would you improve access to school site visits and information?
So there isn't a separate website, but there are different pages for each school, and they're not sufficient. They don't have all the just super practical information that working families need to have when they're making school choice. So one thing I would do is improve those sites so that there was perhaps a video that can help people get a sense of the feel for the school. Also, practical information about the enrichment programs that are available at each school, and basic information about before and after care and what the cost of that is, because those are just fundamental things that we need to know. Language accessibility on each page is important. But more than that, as some people referenced before, I think we really need to invest in building enrollment and retaining students, and it's more than a website. It's taking it to the streets. It's, you know, when I go to Sunday streets with my two boys, I see charter charter schools, and I see private schools have tents, and we should be going into communities and really telling the successful, exciting stories about our schools to get them curious about enrollment.
Thank you so much. Li Miao, next question for you. And there have been a couple of questions about this, so I'm going to sort of combine them into this. Some of the public middle schools and some private middle schools have an off-and-away policy for cell phones during school hours. There's a lot of questions out there about cell phone use in schools, especially middle schools. So what kind of policy would you support for middle schools specifically regarding the implementation of cell phones during the school day?
So I have both volunteered and student taught recently at AP Giannini Middle School and Mission High School. And I would say from the lens being at Mission that we need to have a consistent and stricter cell phone policy. Now, there are times that in the science classroom, for example, you might actually use your phone for timers, as timers. But those are monitored. We have so much unmonitored use, and it's really easy, you know, in any school setting for kids to kind of slip it under their tables. And from where I could sit at various parts in the classroom, I could observe that. The teachers and the parents cannot always catch that. We need to have like a shoe pocket or something, you know, some ways that we, you know, ask them to put their cell phones when they come in the classroom.
Thank you. Vahunga, I'm going to ask you the same question. What are your thoughts about cell phone policies, specifically in middle schools? But if you have thoughts just in general for the district.
Sure. So my son's in middle school, and we had to get him a new phone, and he didn't have it for a week. That week, we had the most conversations ever. I was his best friend, and I was like, I should just not even get this kid a phone anymore. But it's a problem. I'm a therapist. Right? And I really do think you're going to see in the DSM, you know, something around technology and disorders, especially around cell phones. You know, I work for Mobile Crisis, and we've gotten calls from parents who have been attacked by their kids for taking away their cell phones, right? So it's an issue, right? It's an issue, and it's become a mental health issue as well, right? And so we do need stricter policies around what is healthy use of cell phones. And not only do our kids need to be educated about it, but parents do too, right? And so do our school staff. How are we going to do it? We have to come together collectively and figure out best ways to do it. With the professionals, we may have to tap in with the tech field and see what they may be able to suggest. But I do think it's an issue, and we do need to address it.
Thank you. Next question for Michelle. I'm not going to have you go last again, Michelle. Sorry. Michelle and Mia. Vaping has become a huge issue in schools, whether it's high schools or even middle schools. What are your thoughts about prevention efforts to reduce the use of tobacco products and other devices like that?
Oh, boy. well, let's see. There's, I think, a couple of things. We need to have robust discussions about this in our high school health classes, which I know are to an extent happening. I've had kids, my kids have been in high school, and I have heard about those discussions, but we have to be starting it earlier because we all know that that's starting earlier, so that needs to be happening as early as elementary school. And actually a big part of this, I think, is educating the parents and teachers because, y'all, I have like no idea what vaping was like a year ago. So we need to make sure that parents and teachers understand what the risks are and how to identify that that might be happening. The other thing is we have to, you know, I was a big supporter of, you know, against the big tobacco efforts that we've had here and so that they're not marketing to our young people, and we have to all unite around causes like that so that there is less risk because we know that they also are targeting disproportionately students of color, and we have a responsibility to support and protect our young people.
Thank you. Mia?
Yeah, this is a very important issue that, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the tobacco industry was, you know, targeting young people in different ways, and now they're using how cool vaping is and discouraging people from drinking water. So, you know, I worked As director of Transitional AG of San Francisco, I worked with various community groups to have young people educate their peers on the harmful effects of tobacco. Not just cigarettes, but tobacco. Because we can see that when they're using things like, you know, cookies and cream, flavored vaping, it can be misleading and you don't know what you're getting into, and then you have all these harmful health side effects. So I think first of all, I would want to work with our wellness centers, work with peer resources to really have youth designing their own ads to combat the big budget ads that these harmful companies are producing. I think that the youth have the answers.
Thank you. I just got handed an update. There was an additional question from one of the sponsors that has been added, so I'm going to insert this one here, and we'll have this be for Alida and Monica, and it's from the SF Education Fund. African American and Latino kids across our district are not doing well academically. What is your plan to deal with this? What ideas do you have around closing the achievement gap while keeping students at the center? All right. I said Alida and Monica. So Alida?
All right. Well, this is exactly why I'm running. Unfortunately, I've seen firsthand how my children have different expectations set by teachers than were set for me as a child growing up. Not all. I've also seen some great role models for my kids. I think a lot of it starts with getting more teachers of color into the classroom. We've already talked about implicit bias. I think that's a huge part of it, building capacity. And it's not just enough to send one person from a school site off to a training about something as serious as implicit bias. You know, you need to bring someone in and train the entire school site. And you really have to be willing to. We've got some seriously difficult conversations we have to lean into, not just as schools, but as societies. I sat in a restorative practices meeting last year with my my then eighth grade African American daughter, and just it was kind of heartbreaking to hear just some of the stereotypes and the way that she was being talked to, and my white privilege was actually able to correct some of that. And I know that other African American parents in restorative meetings don't have that same privilege, and we really, really need to have this conversation. So thank you for the question.
Sure. Monica?
So this is my highest priority and why I'm running as well. So the first thing I want to do is, you know, similar to Oakland, I want to create an office of equity that is really focused on the achievement of Latinos, APIs, and African Americans with. And a part of that is really focusing on a strong start, the TK through third grade years, because right now the stats are that 50% of our black and brown youth are already falling behind by third grade. So that makes graduation all the more unlikely and incarceration all the more likely. So really, how are we creating that level of learning and those supports early on? And also, and so focusing on literacy, focusing on early identification of learning disabilities and reclassification of our English language learners. And also creating content and curriculum that is culturally relevant for our students, that they're reflected in their studies, so that we're learning more about African American history, Latino history, API history. Because right now, if our students they're not reflected in the course studies, and so they don't feel that it's for them, or they don't feel valued. And so, really focusing on those supports and working with families to make sure that our kids are getting the supports they need early on.
Thank you so much. The next question will be for John and Allison. And this comes from a charter school parent who wants to know, what ways would you work to ensure a better collaboration between charter schools and the traditional public schools? Allison?
Well, I'd like to start by saying we do have some good collaborations with charters in our district. Those are specifically charters that we've approved and have been working collaboratively with us. Some charters have teachers' unions, and then specifically Alida and I have been talking a lot about the fact that for special education, where charters in a lot of cases have been pushing students out, there are some charters in our district, only four, that actually have their SELPA, which is actually the oversight body that oversees how special education is administered. And that's something that charters can do to really
help that relationship. And I think the second thing is that, you know, we've recently, I worked with the board to create a craft charter oversight, which allows for us all to see how charters are working in our system. And, you know, there's a variety of charters that are doing a variety of things, and there's really a lack of transparency around which ones have credentialed teachers, which ones, you know, are pushing out kids. And so that, I think, will help us to be able to see who's doing what, and then we can also make sure that we're supporting families in getting their rights and making sure that they're getting equitable education.
Thank you. John?
We do need transparency on an equal basis between the district schools and the charter schools. But I would have an open mind and scrutiny to both. But what I see more and more is that the using charters as a punching bag is really a way for the district to ignore the fact that 62% of middle school kids are, by the district's own admission, only 62% are ready for high school when they graduate from middle school. So we have to look at our own numbers. We have to look at the droves of parents leaving public schools as the people's indictment of the public schools. Public schools have to be ready and have to be more effective. Here we are in the most expensive city in the country, and yet people willingly use their dollars to spend on private school rather than on public school. We've got frustrated parents within our school districts. Parents who can afford it can leave. So we have to focus on what's going on in the traditional public schools as well as scrutinizing the charter schools.
Thank you. The next question is for Roger and Gabriela. And this is a question about students with undocumented parents. What types of resources or programs or assistance would you like to see be provided for these students, or what do you think should be increased to help students with undocumented parents? And Roger?
Thank you. Well, first off, I think that the recent the ability for undocumented immigrants to be able to vote is important because their children are in the district, and those children are affected by it. They need to be the voices for their children. Unfortunately, in our society currently, it's not safe for them to do that. So what we need to do is support those parents and those families through community schools, where the schools provide information and resources for those parents so that they can get educated along with their students about their path to whatever it is their ultimate goal is, be it citizenship or otherwise, and what's safe for them and what isn't. And so, thank you.
Thank you. Gabriela?
So, I am the daughter of undocumented parents, and I know exactly the experience of many of our students in SFUSD in not being able to communicate with the schools that we're in. And so a lot of the work that I do and the research that I did in my master's in education is how to involve families in a safe way in our classrooms. And I do that through home visits. I've provided workshops for them so that they have an understanding of what we're doing in the classroom and now how they can implement that in their homes. But I'm also able to communicate in their language, which is something we really need to emphasize and provide as a district and a city that is claiming to be diverse. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is for Li Miao and Lex. And according to this question, the person writes, $300 million is a lot of money to refurbish a building and relocate a high school to an art center. Should SFUSD consider alternatives for this building or for this large sum of money? Li Miao?
Can you repeat that?
Yes. So this is about building a new art center and School of the Arts downtown and refurbishing the building down there, which is estimated to cost $300 million. Should SFUSD consider alternatives for this building or for this large sum of money, or should they move forward with the project to relocate Ruth Isawa School of the Arts and create an art center.
So I think it's a decision that's not just made by the board, not just made by district admin or central office. It's something that the community really needs to provide input on, and both the communities that are in that site and, of course, the school that's being moved. We've had similar issues at City College, and I always do sort of blink twice when I see, for example, a big hospital, the private hospital, of course, being moved from California, CPMC, right, to a whole new location. So are we really allocating those resources in a way that makes sense? Can we, reallocate them in a way that serves the communities with, present time programming? It's always also you have to kind of look down the future at what will you get for those $300 million, and are you properly doing the budgeting, because things often do run over cost. So that's something else to monitor as well. Again, at City College, we have the new Performing Arts Center, a little different, but it's a long community process that people need to provide input on.
Thank you. Lex?
So let me say first and foremost that I am a strong believer in the power and importance of the arts, and have seen that the arts are somewhat undervalued by parents and students sometimes as a pathway to good sustainable jobs and career success. So you look at advanced manufacturing, for example, and the skills are very translatable, the kind of detail, even the math or measurements that you use in the arts. And when Google did research about who they promoted, who they retained, who were some of their most successful employees, it was employees who had a foundation in culture and the humanities. That said, I've really been asking a lot of parents. In fact, I was asking Liz, who's a SOTA parent today, how she feels about this relocation and this project. And one of the things I heard, not to put Liz on the spot, this is from a lot of people, is that, parents and students kind of, they're uncertain at this point what the process was in identifying the, how this school relocation was going to happen. The end.
Thank you so much. I like this question because it comes from a fourth grader. So I love kids when they ask questions. So let's go with Michelle. And the question is, this is a student who is very interested in math. And she wants to know if there's going to be enough differentiation, which she spelled correctly, for her to learn interesting math. And I think this goes to perhaps a little into the question of bringing algebra back to the eighth grade and how to engage students in math and how to differentiate math at all grades, including fourth grade. Thumbs up, student.
Thank you for asking that question, and I certainly hope so. One of the main tenets of why I'm running is to making sure that we're meeting all students where they are and that we're providing the challenges and the opportunities for them that they need to be successful. And if you are interested in math, absolutely, I want to make sure you have all those opportunities. And we do need to support our students, to our teachers, to be able to differentiate in their classrooms. I think that what's really important is that we look at the way that we expand opportunities for all of our students is not by limiting opportunities. And so if we have students who are ready to accelerate in middle school and in high school because they love math and they're ready and they want to go on and be engineers and physicists and all kinds of things, we need to make sure they have the access and opportunity to do that. And we need to start early. In elementary school, I want to make sure we have girls' math clubs, we have opportunities for students of color so they see themselves as math people, because I want to make sure that those advanced math courses in high school are reflective of our entire student body. I want to make sure that they all have access there and that we have lots of math opportunities. It's not just calculus, but we're also putting in data science and data visualization and financial management and all of the rest.
Thank you. Phil, same question from our fourth grader. What would you do to make sure that a student who is interested in math in fourth grade remains interested in math for the rest of her life?
Yeah. So I absolutely agree with Michelle. Math is actually one of the subject areas in which I work with coaches a lot on. And differentiation is hard, right? Like when you get a curriculum that's out of the box, and as a teacher you need to decide how you're going to make that curriculum come alive for kids, is an incredibly challenging and awesome job of a teacher. and they can't do it alone. And we in our district need to make sure that if students are ready to accelerate beyond what the teacher is able to provide in the classroom, that we are not standing in the way of that child reaching those opportunities, and that we need to make sure our course pathways, the structural organization of our staffing aligns to that, and that we provide not just the course schedules starting in high school, but in middle school as well. And so I do think that I supported openly the reevaluation of our curriculum and understanding how we exactly align our course pathways, not just to align to Common Core, but also that we're being inclusive of the fact that students are coming at from different levels. And I will stop there.
Thank you. Next question for Monica and Fuunga. What curriculum subject is currently missing that should be taught in school that you would want to advocate for? Monica?
So this is something I've talked to a lot about parents is, you know, just preparing our students for life, like financial literacy, debt, being a good civil servant, being in all these life skills that our kids are not being taught, you know, in our schools, so that when they graduate, you know, we have a huge percentage of kids who are 18, you know, getting into debt. And so how to balance a budget, how to have successful relationships, consent, that needs to be taught very early. Oh, Lord Jesus. And so so all these things about relationships, about finances, about civic engagement needs to be taught from elementary and, you know, from elementary school on to through 12th grade. And so really, so that we're preparing our kids not only to graduate, but prepare them for life so that they can have successful relationships, so that they can be financially stable, they can buy houses, they can, you know, have healthy relationships, et cetera. So that's something that I am very passionate about and making sure that it's, you know, age appropriate. And I remember going back to the question about civic engagement, really even with our elementary students, talking about getting their responses about critical things that are happening now, like, for example, like the whole, you know, families in cages and our kids being separated from their parents. Like, so often our kids are so much braver than we are, and they can provide those solutions that we might be too afraid to tackle. Man, I wish
Thank
I had more
you,
time.
Monica. She could go on for a long time on that one, I could tell.
She can.
Oh, Fuunga.
That's my buddy. Thank you for the question. So K through 12 ethnic studies, right now it's in high school. We need to just streamline it all the way through from kindergarten. That's the first start. And then the second thing for me, and Monica touched on it as well, is, you know, school for me is more than academics, right? Kids are in there for like 6 hours a week. It's about leadership. It's about, you know, one of the things that I really feel like I'm going to bring to the school district is really addressing male privilege and male toxicity. And so we talked about this, the sexual harassment and stuff going on, but we don't really talk about the root of some of this stuff and where it's coming from. And I feel like, you know, and I'm saying that because one of the curriculums to add to the question is mental health, right? Male privilege and male toxicity. For me, it really is a mental health issue, right, that needs to be addressed within our school districts. And I started a Puma Prevent program at Burton High School to address the consent within this country with the amount of young women that were being raped in high schools in the country, and it still exists today. And so, but I think that needs to be expanded throughout our whole entire district. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is for Allison and Martin, please. There's a significant teacher shortage in across California, across the country, really. But what are some specific ideas you have for solving the shortage of special education teachers and paras? And I would love if you could be as specific as possible, please. Let's start with Allison.
Sorry. I really appreciate this question. I was a teacher at Galileo, and both of my parents were psychologists, and so they were my on-call resource. And because I enjoyed working with students with disabilities, I ended up getting more students in my class, and I had a para that was kind of the deal. And it was one of the best teaching experiences I ever had, being able to teach a really diverse group of kids. They could all see that they were valued and that they could all excel in different ways, but I had the support that I needed. And I think one thing that we do not do in our district, and it leads to teacher burnout, it led to my burnout in a lot of ways, and this is outside of all the financial stuff, and we need to reform Prop 13, so we got to talk about that too. But teachers burn out because they're overloaded. And there are some schools that have more of a load than others, and we really have to acknowledge that. And some teachers have more of that load in a school. And we really have no metric to see if you've got 10 kids with IEPs and 2 kids with IEPs, that's work that is currently not compensated for. And that's the same with paras too. And we really need to come up with a metric to compensate teachers and really evaluate how hard they're working so that they have a manageable workload.
Thank you. Martin?
A little disclosure here. I was in special ed. I was in the severely emotionally disturbed class because I am trans. And when I was in high school, this is the class I went in, it had therapy where we had to talk about our feelings. Now, I think we should actually get trans, non-binary, gender expansive teachers and paras. I think we need to recruit. We need to recruit people who traditionally have been shunned by the education system. And I think we need to do that now. We need to start really looking and finding people who have the fire in their belly for teaching and really bring those people to San Francisco Unified School District. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is for John and Alita. Teachers in San Francisco school districts make less money than some surrounding districts. Where do you think the money can come from to pay teachers a more competitive salary? Alita?
Well, we talked earlier about the fact that only 43% of our budget actually goes to the school sites, right? Prop G was a good start. Let's do another Prop G. Actually, let's reform Prop 13 first. Let's start there. That's the big one we need to focus on. The HR department released some data. We had this past year 27% higher number of resignations, not retirements, resignations than we have in years past. And you would think now that we're starting to build teacher housing, we just passed Prop G, these would be things that would get teachers excited to stay. And I will go back to what Allison said. You know, our teachers just aren't supported. It's not all about the money. A lot of it is about the money, and we do not value teachers the way we need to, first of all. But we're not valuing them through the support in the classroom or the money. Ooh, that was loud. So we need to do both.
Thank you. John?
Well, while it's true that the suburban districts pay more than our teachers, and a third of our teachers have to live out of town because of our high housing costs, the key is not necessarily paying more. That's part of it. But the other part of it is how teachers are supported within the classroom, both as individual teachers, but also as members of the community as a whole. So that takes a good, strong relationship teacher to administrator, vice versa. I would make much stronger the role of alumni in schools. Every school has alumni, and they can be supportive of the schools at all levels, and mentoring and also supportive of what's going on in the classroom. So I would use alums as an asset for our schools to strengthen the role of teachers and strengthen the support that all our community gives to our schools.
Thank you. Okay, next question is for Roger and Gabriella. I like this question. It's accurate. Sometimes at the school board meetings, things can get heated. What would you do and or how would you react to a parent screaming at you? Roger.
Well, I have 3 kids, so I'm used to people screaming at me. That doesn't bother me in the least. I also have a job, so I have bosses. One of my talents, if you will, is to be easygoing. Those that know me know, hey, it's just Roger. He's cool. not cool in a good way necessarily, but you know, he doesn't get upset. So if there's a parent who's screaming at the board, and don't get me wrong, that's not the best way to do it, but there, that parent has an issue that needs to be dealt with, that is important to them, and they need to be heard. And I would, perhaps they're too emotional at that time, so I would listen to them then, and then make it a point of meeting with them after or at another time to further hear what they have to say, because it's important.
Thank you, Gabriella.
I agree. I feel if a parent is in a situation where they feel that way towards the board, then we need to figure out what it is that's bothering them and how we can find a solution, because we need to ensure that they're being heard. I have really solid relationships with my families, and it goes beyond student and parent. We've really built relationships that help us make the work better for the students that we are serving. So the board needs to implement that within the community that we are serving throughout the district. There are 7 members, so there are enough people who can communicate with families, ensure that they are being listened to, and have that happen before these moments on the board at the school board meetings.
Thank you. Mia, what do you think is the biggest systemic barrier that you see in San Francisco Unified?
In 60 seconds, I think the biggest systemic barrier facing San Francisco today is racism and the continued legacy of the colonial imperialist state that we live in. So I think that many of the problems that our students are facing in accessing high quality education, the reason why we have an opportunity gap for these students, African American, Latinx, Pacific Islander students, is because of the state that we live in and all of these laws that have been passed for hundreds of years. I think recognizing that schools are a part of the state and a part of these oppressive systems is a step in the right direction. And so that's why it's very important that we teach ethnic studies in all of our schools.
Thank you so much. So we are now at 3 questions each. And rather than start another round of questions, we're actually going to give you a little more time for your closing statements. Woo! And get everybody out of here a little bit early and give you a chance to perhaps approach the candidates individually and ask them some questions. Oh, okay, I'm going to look at this question. So I will say there, I think every single person in this audience wrote questions down, which is fantastic. The interest in what happens in this district is amazing. I will say some of the questions that I didn't get to are questions about transportation. There are questions about students going to private school rather than public schools. There are questions about facilities and insufficient facilities and unequal facilities for some students. There are a lot of LOL questions. There are a lot of math questions. So with that in mind, what we're going to do, timekeeper, Terry, is we're going to give each of you now, we're going to end our evening with the final statements. So you're going to have a minute for your parting thoughts. And we're going to start at the far end with Phil and just work our way backward. So I don't need to call on you. You can just give your closing statements one at a time, if you would, please. Thanks, Phil.
Phil Kim, thank you so much for having us here today. The very first board meeting I went to, when I left, part of the reason why I just kind of decided to run was because I was shocked at how little we talked about teaching and learning in the boardroom, in an organization that arguably that should be the thing that we are doing the best at. And
as an educator, as someone who's spent my time working at the state national level on curriculum development and supporting teachers through coaching, working directly with our directors, chief academic officers, and principals on what support looks like for teachers, we know in K through 12 education, all the data supports that the best way to support and move the needle on outcomes for kids is to double down on what good teaching is. And good teaching means that we have a culturally responsive pedagogy. It means that our teachers are supported and have a balanced curriculum and have the coaching necessary at the school site to actually work on moving the needle for our kids. And so, in my opinion, I think teaching and learning is one of the greatest levers that we can pull. And I will stop right there.
Thank you.
It's an honor to be before you tonight and be a candidate for the school board. As a San Franciscan, as a graduate of our public schools, I've been involved with the public schools since the 1960s when I walked on the first teacher's picket line with my mom, who was a bilingual teacher, one of the first bilingual teachers in the junior highs over at James Lick. I've been proud of the work that the school district has done over the years. I've been involved with it on superintendent advisory committees, working to support students at Balboa, Aptus, Lowell, and other places. But today we have a glaring example of it, ignoring two fundamental problems. I am the candidate who will support academic excellence by bringing back eighth grade algebra and standing for excellence at the same time, closing the gap for Latino and African American students in particular. We have so much work to do, and the school district is coming up with ideas that sound good, but they are not strong in practice. We have so much work to do. I want to get in there to do the kind of work in civil rights and education and public service I've been able to do over my career. Thank you.
I guess I just want to talk about partnerships. That's something we didn't really talk about. Fauga and I and others have been talking about whole community schools. We all benefit when we invest in our public schools. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so in love with our public schools, even when they're not perfect, because when we invest in our schools and we invest in other people's children, we all benefit. And I have a really strong track record of helping to bridge those gaps and create community, because we can't do this alone. None of us can. And because of that work, I've been very successful in helping our schools to really be the vision that our district has set out to create. And because of that, I'm one of the only teachers that's endorsed by the Teachers Union. I'm endorsed by the San Francisco Democratic Party. I'm endorsed by more board members than any other candidate, more supervisors than any other candidate. And it's because I've been showing up. There's a few of us that are educators and parents. We've been showing up and doing the work. And I would really appreciate your vote so that I can continue to do that work and continue to serve and help the district realize its promises for all children in the city. Thank you.
So I think it's very important to include people who are showing up and doing the work on the board. And at the same time, the district has been electing people who've been in the system for a really long time and already have high school age kids or already out of the schools for a long time, and there hasn't been substantive closure of the achievement gap in 30 years of effort. So thinking about what we can do differently is very important to me as someone who will be in the school system for another 15 years with my two boys. And one thing that I am really passionate about is infrastructure. It's so boring and unsexy, but when you think about chronic absenteeism, it's not only what's happening in the curriculum and with teachers, that's very important, but it is also the fact that in the Bayview, asthma hospitalization rates are four times higher. We need to think about health, and we need to think about transportation to get students into the classroom in the first place. And we will be working on school assignment at the same time we're working on a 10-year capital plan for our facilities. That's what I'm excited to do and work for you. Thank you.
So first of all, I just want to thank you guys all for coming tonight, taking the time to listen to us. You know, I know you guys are all working parents. You guys probably are tired and whatnot. And so I definitely want to say thank you. I've been to 8 schools when I was in K through 12. You know, I have all the reasons to be upset about the school district, but I'm not. Right here in San Francisco Unified, because I understand that it's hard. I've worked in our district and I work with the teachers, and people are trying, right? People are trying, and I'm saying this, you know, some of our kids are not even making it to school, right? And I'm leaving this with you guys because, you know, this seems like a good group of people. You know, all of our kids are important, but some of our kids, they're not making it, right? And that's the duty not only with the school board, but all of us here in this room. You know, so that's why mental health is my most important issue, right? If kids don't know that they're loved, that they're taken care of in the schools and at home, we're not getting anywhere. So when we talk about this opportunity gap, right, because it's not an achievement thing, it's an opportunity thing, right, we really have to get to Maslow's hierarchy and start addressing core issues, folks. So I would love your support. Please vote for me in this November election. Thank you.
I want to thank you all for listening tonight, and all of us, because we can talk. As a trans, bi, Jewish parent, I will work my keep off for everybody and every student. I'm endorsed by Evolve California, which is trying to reform Prop 13 close that corporate loophole. Trans United, BIPOL, the oldest and first bisexual political action network, the Bay Area Reporter, which is really exciting. Public school students are really important to me because, you know, I have kids in the district and I want to see every single child succeed. If that means going out to every single school and hanging out and getting to know every single family, I'm going to do it. I've already started. I hope that we can all come together and really make this district a beautiful place where every school is number one on someone's list.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. And thank you for all the organizers who made this event happen. I know it takes a lot of effort to plan events and to get people to show up. So I'm Mia Satya. I'm a first-time candidate. I'm the youngest candidate running this time around. I'm 27 years old. I have a degree in political policy, but I'm wise enough to know that I don't know everything, and that's why I really look to our educators and to our parents to teach me a thing or two along this process. I've been really excited to have lots of great conversations across the city. And I think what sets me really apart is that I not only have the youth organizing experience, I have experience developing legislation, implementing the legislation, and including passing free muni for over 50,000 young people, helping to reauthorize the Children's Fund, which serves provides $100 million of services to children and youth, and I hope to earn your vote this November.
Hi, thank you for having us, first of all, and thank you all for taking an active role in this process and the running of our school district. I firmly believe that the school district and the schools must serve the kids for the needs that they have, rather than providing a service that may or may not fit them. That's why I'm a fan of community schools and arts to allow kids to learn in the way that best suits them and express their learning through their arts and bring their culture into it. We need to reimagine the schools so that they match the needs of students and families today. We need to make sure the money gets to the classrooms and support the teachers so that they can teach our students, because there's nothing more important. It is the most important job there is. Thank you.
Again, yeah, thank you all very much for being here. Thanks to our organizers. Education is a civil right, and education is a social safety net. You don't become a teacher because you want to get rich. You become a teacher because you have a heart of gold. And understanding all of this doesn't necessarily, in and of itself, improve the outcomes in our classrooms. One of my big platforms in my campaign is reading interventions. Reading interventions are difficult to implement. They're expensive to implement if a kid reads differently or learns differently or has a challenge like dyslexia. But if you can't fundamentally teach a child to read and make that child a confident reader, then they can't be successful in society. And that is just one of the many examples of what we need to do to make our kids feel safe and supported and welcomed and valued at school. If we had more than 90 seconds, I would go on and on and on. But thank you all for being here tonight.
Okay, I'm passionate about our public schools. It's why I've been doing this for as long as I have. I believe that it's my responsibility to help. Honestly, I was raised to serve my community, and that's why I'm here. And I want every family in this city to believe that our public schools are good enough for their kids. In fact, that they're great. I want everybody who hasn't had kids yet but is considering it but thinks San Francisco's too expensive knows they can stay here because our public schools are great. I want you to know how much I value parents in this process, and I have worked with families over so many years to help them start PTAs in their schools. I worked to create and pass an after school for all policy with our city and our district leaders, and I have a track record of being really committed, approachable, accessible, responsive, and I want you to know that you have a voice, that I will make room for your voice, and if there's a question that I didn't get to answer for that was your question tonight, email me, michelle@michelleparker.org. I'm happy to answer that. And I have strong support in this campaign. I'm supported by the mayor, all three of our state legislators, which is important because so much happens at our state level related to our schools. Most importantly, I'm supported by lots of community members and families and students and teachers. Thank you.
Hi again, and thank you also for being here after a long Monday. I just want to emphasize that my run for school board is an extension of my work, of what I've already been doing for families and students in SFUSD. I understand joyful learning. I understand socio-emotional learning and social justice education and how that contributes to the whole human experience. So not just emphasizing academics. And we know that young people are at the tip of social change. So we need to provide the resources for them to do that through the arts, through civic engagement, and look to the people who understand them best in order to do that. The school board is not a standalone entity. We cannot do this work alone. I can't do the work alone in my classroom. So building the relationships throughout San Francisco and ensuring that the child is at the center is what we need to continue doing, and emphasizing that children are happy in our schools.
The reality is that no one is going to save us but us. The answers for our public schools aren't going to come from Sacramento or from Washington. So what are we going to do as a city to make sure that no child falls through the cracks? It really is going to take us all coming together, whether you're a parent, whether you're a CBO, whether you're a business, a nonprofit, et cetera. We all need to come around our kids to make sure every child feels valued and supported. I have a lot of great support in this campaign because I'm an organizer and I'm a community builder. And I know, you know, especially national, there's so much tension, there's so much division. But within our city, whether you're white, black, rich, poor, et cetera, we all want the same things. We all want a good education and opportunities for our kids. So how do we come together to make that a reality in SFUSD? And sometimes I'm like, oh, Lord, what are we doing? We're stepping into, like, the depths of hell and doing undo, like, structures of racism and everything. But that's the work that needs to be done. And we need people who are going to choose the better parts of themselves every day for our kids. And I'm excited to run. I'm excited to champion you and to rebuild our community and make sure we have strong schools, because that's where our kids learn value. That's where they learn what they're capable of, and making sure that every child can succeed.
I've been at this for 20 years because I love working with youth, and I saw that from the early days when I went from learning from crisis family counseling to saying, wait, how do we change a system? I started with the mentoring program I built in two Bayview schools, and most recently I've worked with two high schools where we brought in all the seniors to City College so that they could get a taste of hands-on learning, 21st century skills, biotechnology, computer networking, digital media design. So I want to apply several lenses to being a commissioner. One is that lens of, you know, what do teachers need, educators, what the system needs to spark learning. And I've been in the classroom, so I want to support and fully resource what teachers, educators, social workers know, and families, of course, students know that the schools need. And let's build those community schools. I was just at Buena Vista Horace Mann today. The social workers shared so much. I do not see the statistics as some dire reflection. I see them as an opportunity and a challenge because I've worked in so many communities and I believe that we will get there because we are doing the work and we can do more.
Thank you. I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I almost wish we had more time because this is not only a very large panel of candidates, but a very strong panel of candidates. And I hope this evening was helpful for all of you in making your decisions on Election Day.